Hello and welcome. You are tuned into 2SER 107.3. My name is Andrew Popel, and this is Final Draft. Every week, books, writing, and literary culture. Now, I'm on a little bit of a summer break, preparing for all the books that are going to be hitting our shelves in 2020. There is some amazing stuff coming up, and I'm busily reading, ready to bring you some new books, some new author interviews. But I didn't want to leave you hanging, so I do have some conversations to help reintroduce you to some of the great books that we've experienced over the last 12 months. Now, with January 26 on our calendar this week, a day that is known to Australia's Indigenous inhabitants as Invasion Day, I thought it would be timely to present a couple of books for younger readers that, however you want to spend the day, would be a great way to introduce some heritage and culture and language to the younger people in your life and maybe, you know, get a little bit yourself. So I want to share again my interview with Jasmine Seymour. Her children's book is Kuimitigar, and this book is written in Darug and in English, and it is a great opportunity, especially for Sydneysiders, as many of you listeners would be, to find a little bit about the culture and language of the area that we know as Sydney. Later on in the show, I have a book by one of Australia's foremost illustrators, particularly of books for children, Bronwyn Bancroft. It is about a book called Clever Crow, written by Nina Lawrence. And this book is written in English and Jumbapunyu, and it tells the story of a wily crow in search of a meal. I wanted to share both of these books that are in English and in language as an opportunity for whatever you're doing over this weekend, whatever you're doing over this week, to introduce to yourself, introduce to your kids some of the heritage that goes back tens of thousands of years in this country. And as we think about our nation and our national identity, remembering that there is so much more, and there is so much to acknowledge and so much pain to heal, but also that we can start with children and reading to them. You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft, and those conversations are coming up after this short break.
Join 2SER and friends to raise funds and support ongoing bushfire relief. On January 31, The Bands Next Door is hosting a special charity fundraiser at their regular home at The Loft at UTS. As always, our lineup is all local. Warm up your feet with some cheeky covers from Tokyo Cell, then get stuck right in with music from Finger Me. Sounds Like Winter. And finish the night with Syntax Error. Entry is free, and all proceeds from the Sausage Chisel and Bar will be donated. 2SER partners.
You are on 2SER 107.3. My name is Andrew Popel, and this is Final Draft. I have got an absolutely fantastic book to introduce today. I'm really excited about this. I feel like I want you listeners out there to want to take this book home. It is called Kuimitigar, A Story on Darug Songlines. It's a wonderful book for earlier and younger readers that's told in both Darug and English. Kuimitigar is written by Jasmine Seymour, and the artist is Leanne Mulgo Watson. And I'm so happy to introduce Jasmine Seymour. Jasmine's a Darug woman. She's an educator, an author, and an illustrator. Warami Jasmine, welcome to Final Draft.
Warami Mitigar. Hello, friend. Thank you for having me.
Kuimitigar is such a wonderful book, and I read it. I had the chance to read it with my nephew recently, and you know, after we were practicing all these Darug words together, I've decided that I need to share this experience with as many readers, old and young, as I can. I mean, and obviously I can't lend everyone my book, so I've got to tell them about it. I've got to get people out there buying it. Before we get, though, to the book, I wanted, if you could, to give us a bit of an introduction, because Darug Nuru was the site of invasion in 1788. It's been the site of frontier wars and massacres. But despite what I see now as deficiencies in my own education, perhaps the education of many of us who grew up in the 80s and the 90s, Darug culture and Darug language is still vital and strong in the Sydney region. Can you give us just a little bit of background to what Darug language and culture is before we get into the book?
Absolutely. I think because of colonisation and because a lot of the Darug mob are fairer skinned than other Indigenous peoples, a lot of people think that we don't perhaps exist. But our families have always been here and never left. Many of us married into the colonial sort of families. And we always knew that we were Aboriginal because we had Aboriginal family members who were very obviously Aboriginal. And so we've all grown up on country, some of us knowing and some of us not knowing. But as we have been getting prouder of our past, we are getting stronger and, you know, we're really celebrating our Aboriginal history because I think out here in the Hawkesbury for a long, long time, people were very, very interested in their colonial past and they were very proud of that. But you weren't allowed to be proud of your Aboriginal past because, you know, something terrible would have happened to you, like your kids would have been taken off you if you celebrated being Aboriginal, you know, back in those days, or you wouldn't have got a job, or you would have had some terrible thing imposed upon you because you are Aboriginal. But that has changed now, and we're all a lot freer to be able to discuss that. And it's so wonderful for the older members of our community because they very much, you know, lived that. And for us now to be able to celebrate that, it's just extraordinary.
And now, thanks to your wonderful book, you have this opportunity, we have this opportunity to share this with you. Kui Mitiga, it takes the reader on a journey guided by Mulga, the Black Swan. And I really love this. And I hope perhaps you could describe how you've structured this journey and what was important for you in telling readers about this.
Well, when we started conceptualizing this book, we didn't have any Darug language picture books out in community or in schools. And we just really felt like we were just so desperate to have a Darug language book out there for people to read. And so I was looking at Leanne's gorgeous pictures that she was doing about the seasonal changes in Sydney. She was working on a Darug calendar. And while we were looking at that, the book slowly started to come together. And as I was sort of piecing it together, I was also part of the Real Secret River Project. And we were investigating a lot of sites and places along the Jurubbin, the Hawkesbury River, and walking across, you know, this song line, the Sydney rock formations, the superhighway, where all these sites were. And the story just came to me. You know, this is the story of our place, of Aboriginal Sydney, and it's extraordinary, and it's all still there, and language opens that up.
I think it's really important. I want to second what you're saying there, because radio is not the perfect medium for sharing what is so amazing about Kui Mitiga. But when I was reading, I noticed the story following the passage of seasons, and Leanne Mulga Watson's illustrations, like Will and I, as we read, we had so much fun discovering all of the elements that you describe and that you teach us in Darug language. And then I would ask Will, can you see this on the page? And sometimes they were hidden in constellations or magicked away in trees, and Will would search, and it was such a wonderful collaborative experience. I mean, there is so much in this book as an adult, and you know, a lot of adults need to have that excuse of a child in their lap to read it, but I say no, just read it yourself. But I was wondering, like, from a more formal perspective, where we're at as a country or even at a state level teaching Indigenous languages, and what you might hope to see from Kui Mitiga and more structured teaching.
Well, I would really hope to see, all Indigenous languages incorporated into local school curriculum. So wherever you are at your school and whatever country you're on, that language should be taught. And sometimes language is still emerging. You know, we say that it is waking because it has been sleeping. And Darug language very much is waking up. And, you know, many people in our community are getting better and better at language, and I think we're going to see a lot more of it. And we also want it to be shared very freely. You know, we want this language to become normal. We, you know, so many of the places around Sydney have Aboriginal names, and we'd love to see more of that, and schools really embracing, you know, Darug culture, because this is one of the most wonderful things to celebrate.
The time has come. I've tried my best to incorporate some Darug in my interview with you, but older ears always need more practice with languages. But I've got to ask, what are some essential Darug Dalang that you would like to share, and you would like maybe some of the listeners to learn? Are there some particular words that you could perhaps share with us right now?
Well, I think a good one for this afternoon is Bujuri Gumara. Good afternoon, Bujuri Gumara.
Bujuri Gumara?
Yeah, Bujuri Gumara. Yanu is goodbye.
Yanu? Well, I'm not going to say... Not yet. Not yet, yeah. Jasmine. Give me another couple of minutes and I will say Yanu.
Yanu. Yanu is goodbye. What's another great word? The Nura means country.
Nura.
Yeah, Nura means country. Birong is stars.
Birong is stars, yeah, okay.
Yep. The word for white cockatoo is kirui.
Kirui?
Yeah.
I remember reading that, I think, in the book, and Will and I got a chance to talk about some that we had seen that day. So that's one to definitely, you know, you take out into the world with you.
Yeah, of course, and the word kooey, of course, which is sounds more like gooey, but that of course means come here, and that's, you know, an ancient word that has been welcoming people to Darug country for many generations and many thousands of years. Wombat is a Darug word.
I saw some of these words that I just thought I hear them, and we've incorporated them into our English usage, but it was so wonderful to discover that about them.
Yes, I know. And they say that there is more Darug language in Australian English than any other language, because at the beginning it sort of melded together a little bit, and many of our words got embraced by everyone. So that's very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't think there is any particular time of the year that is better or worse for buying books. But, Jasmine, you might agree with me that this is a time where people's thoughts turn to buying things in gifts. So I'm going to say it again. Kui Mitigar is just this incredible book to share with everyone in your life. So if you've got little people, or if you are a little person, this would be a fantastic gift for this sort of end of the year time. Jasmine, thank you so much for taking the time to share a little bit about the book.
Oh, you are so welcome. Thank you so much for having me on, and thank you for loving our book. We love it very much, and we're so excited to have it out in the world.
Before I say Yanu, I wanted to ask one more. Is there a Darug word for thank you that I can share with you?
Didgerigor.
Didgerigor? Didgerigor, Jasmine, I have appreciated so much your time sharing Kui Mitigar. I hope so many other people get the chance to discover it. And we have a new generation to look forward to, who will be speaking even more Darug in Sydney and across Australia. Yanu, Jasmine, Didgerigor.
Didgerigor, Yanu. Thank you. Bye.
It's here. Sydney Festival is taking over the city once again, filled with cabaret, music, theatre, art and more. From January 8 to 26, experience some of the best international and local performances. From Holly Herndon to Yarning Circles, or the Bankstown Poetry Slam to one of the UK's top illusionists, you'll find plenty of inspiration for a great night out. Check out the full program of events at sydneyfestival.org. 2SER is a media partner of Sydney Festival.
You tuned into 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft. I am Andrew Popel, and I'm joined on the line by Bronwyn Bancroft. Bronwyn is a Junbin clan member of the Bundjalung Nation. She's illustrated and or written nearly 40 books since 1992. And trust me, if you have children, you work with children, if you've been a child in the last 20 years or so, you will have come across some of Bronwyn's wonderful work. She's won numerous awards. She's an artist. She's a designer. She was a founding member of the Bumali Aboriginal Artists Cooperative, where she served in numerous roles as well as having exhibited there. As you might guess, she is incredibly busy, so I am so happy to welcome her to Final Draft to discuss her latest book, which was written by Nina Lawrence. It's called Clever Crow. Bronwyn, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Clever Crow, or Waklia Jambach, as it is in Jambapunyu, is a story of a hungry crow searching for a meal. And Jambapunyu is a Yolnu language from East Arnhem Land. And Clever Crow, it's told in both Jambapunyu and English, which is just, it's so fantastic for all the readers that are going to be enjoying this book. It must have been a pleasure to work on something like this, but I was wondering, before we get to the wonderful book, can we talk about your art? Because you've had such an expansive career.
Yeah, it's been going for a while. It's ticking over. I always say to, when I do any presentations to schools or whatever, you just have to live long enough as an artist to get the rewards. I mean, not financial rewards, but just, people actually coming back and particularly in Australia, I think, where we tend to elevate and have like a star system where we really focus on just a few stars. And I think everybody's a star in the universe of life. So as far as I'm concerned, I think everyone that creates is amazing. And I don't like elitism in the arts at all. And work very actively to remove myself from the ego around it. But I love doing what I'm doing, and I feel exceptionally, grateful that I've been able to conduct a career for over 30 years and enjoy it, really. Yeah, amazing.
Well, as I said in my intro, your first work for children, it came out in 1992. So there is a generation of adults and children that are growing up now that have experienced your work, but you've been collected by the National Gallery, state galleries across the country, as well as private collections around the world. As a designer, you featured in Paris. That's a huge and diverse audience. Where does creativity and storytelling begin for you then with such an audience?
I think one of the major things for anyone that's undertaking to do any kind of career in the arts is to be multidimensional, like in terms of, I suppose there's different terms for it, but multidisciplinary, but at the same time be absolutely authentic to the truth within your work. Like, I just don't do anything that's fashionable. Like, I'm not a digital person. I mean, obviously I use a computer and all of that stuff, but I don't do computer-generated imagery. It doesn't interest me. The translating of putting my images onto canvas or paper is the ultimate for me. But I do work across a lot of mediums because as an artist, you have to make an income, and I've raised three children as a single parent on an artist income, so I've been very diverse across those art form ranges to create enough income to put my kids through school and secondary education and be there for them and make sure they've got a home over their head, a roof over their head. So I think the portfolio is, I love having a diverse portfolio. It's always engaging.
Now, I think I'm going to acknowledge right now that I'm going to fail in my vocabulary to create a picture of your art. I'm going to encourage people to get out there and read Clever Crow, read any of your books, or check out your art. But as I read the books, I was transfixed by your use of movement and colour, scale and pattern to invest the narrative in the illustrations. The words, Nina's words in Clever Crow are amazing, but I could read the story also from your illustration. So what goes into developing and crafting this visual language for you?
I think one of the things with Clever Crow, which when I was working with Mugabulla, and I have done like the 41 books, I just, at the beginning you'll see that I've actually done it in black and white because I really wanted to surprise the kids and just sort of, and because I'm known for colour. So I thought, oh my God, I'll do the first four page, like the first double spreads is black and white, and they'll be going, oh my God, what is she doing? And then that just sort of moves. I slowly integrate the colour. So when I read the text, and because I particularly wanted to, because Nina's only 18, and I wanted to work with Mugabulla, and I dropped my rates by 4/5. To do this work. So a book takes quite a long time, so I actually cut my rates down by 4/5 of what I normally charge to do the book, because I thought, well, an 18-year-old, you know, girl from Yirrkala, that she wants to do writing, this is a really good platform for her to launch potentially her writing career off. So largely, you know, I've developed the design and how I would like the words to flow across the bottom, but not emblematic of a rainbow serpent, which someone tried to read into it. But it's not. It's just using a form to be able to have some lyricism or lyrical, like, motion on the page for kids. And I love colour and I love, like, investigating stuff, so I hope that the kids do too.
Yeah, let's go there to that those opening couple of pages. We have, I particularly enjoyed this juxtaposition. So in the first few pages, the sort of splash pages of Clever Crow's search for food, can't find food anywhere, and he's sort of soaring and then looking, and it's almost monochrome. And then the discovery of the turtle egg, and there's suddenly this riot of colour. For me, it almost evoked this sort of the sparseness of the time when he couldn't find food, and then the finding of food. So, but preparing for our chat, I also read a few of your other books, and I realised how much in these pages you were actually teaching me about looking at and noticing details in the world. Is that a part of what you want to give readers?
Definitely. I think we, you know, I walk around with my eyes down in front and above. So, like, I don't, you know, I work on 180 degrees. I'm always catching. And I think my Uncle Pat taught me that, my dad from living in the bush, how to look at for everything, because, you know, you've got to look when a bird's there, or you've got to see when the storm's coming, or you've got to see, you know, read the sky, or you've got to notice if there's a snake, you know, somewhere. I mean, you've really got to be alert. And then when you're alert, you actually, you're welcoming into your brain and your senses the diversity of nature. And I obviously have in total adoration of nature, and I'm absolutely horrified with what we're doing with this world and the ignorance of people around climate change. So I'm trying to increase people's visual perception around the world that they live in, including picking up rubbish. So if I go to the beach where I currently live in Byron Bay, I'm always coming back with rubbish. But if every single person took responsibility for themselves, then we wouldn't have that problem. Yeah.
So Clever Crow is written by Nina Lawrence. She's a descendant of the Gimoi Wallabara Yindinji mob. And the story that she's written, it's shared in both English and Jumbapunyu. What did it mean for you to collaborate on a bilingual work like this?
I just think it was. It's just good to have more Aboriginal literature out there. I think, you know, one of the things that drove me to and propelled me to actually become a book illustrator was when I was a young girl, there were no books in any of the libraries with content or information about Aboriginal Australia, which I think, obviously, you know, that is part that's fully remiss in our whole our education programs and curriculum, that we don't have a compulsory Aboriginal, you know, culture and history and art in the curriculum, because at the end of the day, this is the country that, you know, the custodians are Aboriginal people, so we should really be doing our learning at the beginning of that, of what this country represents in for Australia. So when I was propelling, you know, wanting to do that, it's been a personal campaign to try and introduce as many books as I can during my lifetime, so that there are, like you say, a generation of people that actually grow up with it being quite, you know, just a normal thing, which it certainly wasn't in my generation.
Mm. Now, the story, I feel like I've neglected the story of this wonderful book. Clever Crow, it follows the story of this crow and he's looking for a meal.
Very cheeky.
Yeah, and his cleverness, I love that he's called Clever Crow because his cleverness is being constantly tested by circumstance, and he meets other birds and other animals as well as people whom he ultimately steals the turtle egg from. Can you tell me about the personalities and the way these personalities interplay, especially between the human and the animal characters? Mm. Now, we've already mentioned that Clever Crow is written in both Djambapunyu and English, and Djambapunyu is it's a Yolngu language from East Arnhem Land. I'm going to say now, I've meant to say it at the beginning, that I apologise if my pronunciations are, this is a second language for me, if my pronunciations are not precise, but we have this wonderful bilingual book. And across the country, there's a growing movement to have languages being taught in schools. Now, as I said before, I'm a speech pathologist, so I know there's this immeasurable benefit for children who develop language bilingually, no matter what that language is, what your home tongue is, and if you're learning English or something else. But I wondered, do you have thoughts on what this could mean for us as a country that still doesn't even have, we don't have treaty, there hasn't been constitutional recognition of First Nations, for languages, especially like local nations' languages, to be taught in schools?
Well, you know, yes, we have to grow up, don't we? I always say that, like, it's the oldest country, you know, living civilization in the world, and the most immature governments that have prevailed. And it's too anglicised for a start. And, you know, the relevance that only English, you know, colonialist history matters is just, you know, really, it's quite wrong. And I think as a nation, if we can get these you know, different language books out into... We can get a groundswell. I've always believed in grassroots. You know, I've believed in grassroots organisations. I've believed in grassroots as I believe that people are... And, you know, the wave of humanity are the things that will create change, not governments. We are the people that can actually go to the and say, you're not going to be in government because you're not going to do anything about climate change. And you know what? We want these, you know, bilingual books in our curriculum, and we want to embrace that. And you know what? We want to learn how Bundjalung language, and we want to learn, you know, a Dungari language, and we want to learn, you know, Gumbangia language, and we want to be able to converse with Aboriginal people in those languages. We want this. So I'm very... excited about the idea that potentially I might be able to get a bilingual Bundjalung book with my publisher. So, but I'm already two books. I've already deferred like two books, so I'm running behind, and I'm going to run out of time in my life if I don't sort of get onto stuff. So, hopefully, you know, maybe not next year, but the year after, we can convert and have a book that we can bring out. But I think. Hopefully we'll get a groundswell across the nation with publishers actually embracing it.
It's happening. It doesn't get more grassroots than the children at preschool, in primary school. And I know it must to you look like a long to-do list, but all I heard was the excitement of a couple more books that we can look forward to. Everyone, I am speaking with Bronwyn Bancroft. She's the author, illustrator of more than 40 books. Sorry, I got that wrong at the beginning. And her latest is Clever Crow. It was written with Nina Lawrence. Bronwyn, thank you so much for the time. I want to say Bugulwan. I hope I've pronounced that correctly.
Bugulwan. Yeah. Very good.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you helping me share Clever Crow with 2SER listeners.
Excellent. It's been a privilege, and have a beautiful day.
Celebrate Sydney Lunar Festival at more than 100 exciting events over 16 days. From Haymarket's Lunar Lane Street Party on Lunar New Year's Day to a fabulous Lunar New Year Fair. Discover 12 Zodiac Lunar Lanterns, gigantic golden rat robots, an electrifying LED line, and dragon dancers. There are talks, tours and workshops, shopping and markets, exhibitions, cultural performances, and lunar feasts. Saturday, January 25th to Sunday, February 9th. SydneyLunarFestival.com. City of Sydney sponsors 2SER.
Yes, this is 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft, and my name is Andrew Popel. Thank you so much today to Bronwyn Bancroft and to Jasmine Seymour. We were discussing their books, Kui Mitigar and Clever Crow. Jasmine's book, Kui Mitigar, written in Darug and in English. And Bronwyn Bancroft and Nina Lawrence's book, Clever Crow, was written in Jumbapunyu. A fantastic opportunity to share with your kids some of the amazing and numerous languages across Australia, and just to give them some insight about the tens of thousands of years of history of this nation. Now, I've got to say goodbye, and if you want to hear more of those conversations, the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast, there's almost 100 conversations on there. My name is Andrew Popel. I am looking forward to being back with some new books for 2020, and till then, see you later, and happy reading.
My mind has just been blown.
2SER.